267.
Where's the blue light?
There it is. Call the House Committee on Healthcare to order. And open up a work session on House Bill 3667.
Mr. Chair, members of the Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is House Bill 3667. This directs the Public Employees Benefit Board and the Oregon Educator Benefit Board to contract for health benefit plans to serve limited geographic region of the state under specified circumstances. You'll recall on the 4th last week we had the Dash 2 amendments. They are still before you. The committee did not take any action on that. And I would like to take the opportunity to mention that on the Monday meeting, the 8th, the chair asked me if this had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I said it did not. I was wrong. It does. I apologize. I looked at the wrong folder.
And are the Dash 2s, have they been, oh, we have to start over anyway, right?
Right, and we do have fiscal and revenue impacts on the Dash 2s, Mr. Chair. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Representative Kotek, do you have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chair. I would...
If I could, I had a question maybe after.
Sure, no, go ahead.
I guess I'm having trouble. If it doesn't have a fiscal or revenue impact, why is it going to Ways and Means?
Well, because it was given a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I understand. I just wondered
by the speaker, and because the proponents of it are happy to have it go to Ways and Means. I just checked.
If they don't care, I don't.
No, they care. They want it to go to Ways and Means. It's a strange world.
I think at the original bill, they might have thought it needed a subsequent referral.
Yes, and I can understand how that could have been seen, but since it doesn't, it just seems like...
We're just going to abide by the process, Representative. They want to go to Ways and Means. I understand. That's a good question.
You might step out and talk to him.
We don't have medication, do we?
I take mine regularly.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3667. We had those from before, correct, Sandy?
Correct.
Want to comment on it, President Kotek?
Certainly. It would simply state that regional plans, both for OEB and PEB, would be assessed with the same criteria that statewide plans are assessed.
And we had some folks on both sides of that issue. Is it, do I understand that they've agreed, President Kotek, to that?
That is my understanding. There was some attempt to maybe have it a different amendment, but everyone is agreement that that's what we have right now. That's, we'll take it. We'll go with the Dash 2.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm still working. I may be the youngest member of this committee, but I am not the most technologically proficient, and I'm still working to get my system operating here, and I don't have the Dash 2 amendment in front of me.
Here's one coming.
Yeah, they're not in.
Basically, the Dash 2 says that the plan should be evaluated using the same criteria that statewide's are evaluated on. The implicit assumption is that would also, if it wins on that, it would be enough to...
You know, I think we got those handed out. I don't have them in my electronic system either, I don't think.
I think that you emailed.
I think we had them on Monday.
Yes.
They were emailed.
Well, I think I emailed everything.
Yeah, they're not in mine either.
Okay.
You
okay about it?
Why don't we
read them out loud?
They're not in the packet. I didn't put them in the packet because we talked about them previously, so I didn't waste the paper this time. So if it's not in a folder from a previous meeting...
So I can walk you through them. So what
yes,
they
why,
do
why
is...
Why don't you read them out loud?
I don't have them, but let me say what they do is...
Here comes one.
No, I have more.
So it removes elements of the proposed bill and replaces. So the bold that's in the bill now gets replaced, essentially.
We're going to get this paperless thing straight one of these days, but.
So on page two.
It's not going to be in this session, I'm afraid.
We're going to put everybody back to work.
So on page two of the bill, lines 4 through 8 would be deleted. Everyone with me?
Yeah.
And what would be inserted would be an item number 7 that reads, the board shall evaluate a benefit plan that serves a limited geographic region of this state according to the criteria described in subsection 1 of this section. So if you go to the first page of the bill, you see all those criteria listed. Employee choice among high-quality plans, competitive marketplace, everything on the first page. So what the insert says is the board shall evaluate a benefit plan that serves a limited geographic region of the state according to the criteria described in that subsection. So that's inserted in, it's replacing the existing language in the bill in the, I believe that's the PEB section, and then the next part of the bill is the OEB section and does the exact same thing. Exact same wording, deletes line 41 through 45 on page 2 and says, the board shall evaluate a benefit plan that serves a limited geographic region of the state according to the criteria described in subsection 1 of this section. So it's emphasizing that regional plans will be scored just like along the same criteria as statewide plans, but it eliminates the confusion some of us had about fitting the best needs of that region, which was in the original.
Is there any further discussion? You feel okay? Is there any objection to the amendments? Amendments are in the bill. Can I have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move that, I don't know this language. It goes to Ways and...
That doesn't stop me.
move to the floor with the...
I move that we pass House Bill 3667 as amended with the dash two amendments with a due pass recommendation, two ways and means.
By prior reference.
I think it's to the floor.
To the floor.
With a due pass recommendation.
Ways and means referral.
With a subsequent referral to ways and means.
Ways and means by prior reference. Let's redo it.
I move that we approve House Bill 3667 with the dash two amendments with a due pass recommendation to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
By prior reference. I think we got it. Is there any discussion on the motion? We have a roll call, please.
Representative Bruin?
He's excused, and would you just note that for future roll call?
By a due
process. Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative Kinnamer?
Aye.
Representative Kotak?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. We don't need a carrier. I will close the work session on House Bill 3. Right? House Bill 3667. And open a work session on House Bill 3664. I think we have some amendments on that. Mr. Kotak, are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, if you remember last time, 3664.
3664. Why don't you tell us what 3664 is?
Sorry. No, that's okay. That's all right. So 3664, if you'll recall, is the bill to continue to provide medical assistance for young adults aging out of foster care up to age 21. And we had talked at the last meeting that we would have an amendment, which I think I handed out at the time. It was the dash two amendment that would amend the bill to allow for the funding for this additional coverage to come as part of the Healthy Kids Plan, and part of the resources would be the premium tax revenue that we passed in 2009 legislature. So the fiscal you have, which I'm just now seeing it for the first time.
Right, we just got it.
Okay.
Representative Kotak.
It is in the packet.
It's only hard copy, and it's in your packet because I just got it.
So the numbers on it are not any different from the fiscal that we had on the original bill in terms of the numbers. Mm-hmm. But what you will see is that instead of a general fund expenditure of $463,454 for 09-11, that now becomes other funds because that is being moved out of the provider tax revenue that covers Healthy Kids. I don't believe any of the other numbers have changed Patty O'Sullivan is nodding her head no. I think there was some discrepancy about why some of the numbers on the front didn't match in the back. Mm-hmm. I would note that there's most of the bulk of the money, the expense is about the actual coverage, but there are some administrative costs, and so you have to add up all the different paragraphs to get the numbers on front. So I just would... If you're just looking at one paragraph, they might not match because there are other numbers you have to add into them.
Representative Kotek, I have a question, if I may. These young people would be covered under OHP Basic, right?
No, this would be under Oregon Health Plan Plus.
I mean Plus, I'm
plus,
sorry.
Plus, Mr. Chair.
Basic isn't the word, right.
Right.
Plus.
With the goal standard. Of maintaining the type of full coverage, you know, so that would be dental, that would continue to be the mental health and A&D treatment that for this higher risk population that would need.
And there has been conversation with folks who were in the negotiations from the health plans on this, and they feel quite comfortable with this
I have heard that there is comfort level with the consistency of talking about these as the state's children and carrying that and covering them through Healthy Kids, yes.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I strongly support the policy here, and I think it fulfills, well, I'm not sure if it fulfills, but it extends and is consistent with our commitment to this category of children who are wards of the state on their 18th birthday. I just sort of following up on my conversation with Representative Kotek, I'm particularly when we look at the rollout cost of this in 2011-2013, I'm cognizant of the fact that the 1% assessment is not expanding, or at least there's not, we're not dealing with a bill that expands the assessment. So the revenue stream is not increasing, but the population we're covering or that's eligible for coverage is expanding. And I just want to be certain about what that means for other children who are, you know, who qualify for Healthy Kids. I recognize that we're dealing with a lot of estimates, right? We're talking about 80,000 kids in this biennium, but we could be off by 10,000, right, depending on enrollment efforts or more, and this is a very small fraction of that. But I hope that as this goes to Ways and Means, there will be real attention to what this means for the kind of fiscal stability of the program and the primary commitment that we made to populations when we passed Healthy Kids last session.
And Representative, I think that's an excellent point, and I think we should work with the department when we have the discussion on Ways and Means, because I thought Director Goldberg's comment about, in the grand scheme of that program, the population here, about 400 adults, is really within the margin of error of the entire Healthy Kids program. But what will be helpful with Ways and Means is see the projections, where we are right now. This is a static population, so I think we'd have more concerns if this was also a growing population, and then we'd have to really seriously consider that. But in general, this is a small, static population. But I think we'll definitely get into that in Ways and Means. Absolutely.
Well, and I think Representative Maurer's questions in the last session, I think the financial estimate is a little odd, because essentially what we're putting people into an insured group covered under Medicaid, and the fact that this has a different risk profile than some of the other subgroups, I think is probably not too relevant. So we're adding 300 to what would be, what, 40,000 kids in the OHP Plus, are we estimating? Of that, maybe 40, maybe 50 of those 80 are in this population, and
yes,
I think it will be a de minimis impact on that, it seems to me. But who knows? Okay, do we have a motion on the amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt the dash. Did we adopt? No, we didn't. Adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3664.
Is there any discussion on the amendments? Is there any objection? Bill is amended with the dash twos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then
you've had some practice with this motion.
Yeah, I'm ready. I move that we move House Bill 3664 as amended. Do pass as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Yes. Is there any discussion on that? Ron, Representative Maurer, you had a comment on this. Maybe you could abbreviate it a little and make it again.
These folks are, we're wards of the state. This is a population that the state has had responsibility for a number of years. And when they turn 18, basically, we open the door and we push them off the train and say, I hope you're not landing on a rock. This is about, a glide path for many of these young kids. And as much as anybody, they deserve to have a smooth path into the real world, because their lives are not necessarily easy, and the least we can do is give them some primary assistance. So, I mean, although I don't agree with the 1%, but I think if you're going to do that, this is who we need to be dealing with. So I'm in full support.
Is there any other discussion? I would like to put on the record the fact that we've had quite extraordinary testimony from the young people that have been involved in this population, talking about the problems, how so many of the ones we've talked to really have succeeded over extraordinary obstacles, and that just not only told me how special the people were that have succeeded, but made me worry about the ones that we haven't heard from in terms of whether they got the same mental health treatment, the same dental treatments, the same things that are needed for chronic disease as the other. So I think this is quite a splendid thing to be doing. Member roll call, please.
Representative Byrne is excused. Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative Kinnamer?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 3664, on to Ways and Means, Godspeed, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3664. Let's open a work session on House Bill 3639. I think, again, we have a couple of proposed amendments, but Madam Administrator, will you tell us what this bill is about? I'm going to remember that.
It's all right.
One of these days.
It's okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 3639 establishes the program for loan repayment for primary care providers. It creates the Primary Care Student Loan Repayment Fund and continuously appropriates money into the fund to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission for the purpose of repaying student assistance loans. And I have some amendments that I'm going to be passing around.
Would you?
You started to
took them back.
Yeah,
that
was a long bill.
That was a long bill. We have dash ones and twos.
Dash ones and twos. So, Mr. Chair, may I?
Please.
When we last met, we were trying to move this bill, and we had a little confusion about whether this was ready for prime time to go to Ways and Means. And then, as many things in this building, there was 11th hour reprieve, and we all got together and said, how can we make this bill better? And we're going to hear from the folks who worked on this. What you have in front of you is a dash one and a dash two. I will just point out the difference in the dash one and dash twos to start off, and then I'd like to hear from the folks who worked on these to explain the rest of these. They'll do a much better job. But really, we were concerned about the sideboards on the loan repayment program. There was worry about the prioritization of rural. So we had assorted folks go back and work on this. The difference between the dash ones and the dash twos are on the front page of the amendment, actually line 18. The dash one includes in the definition of physician, doctors of naturopathic medicine. The dash two does not.
Representative Kotek, I had heard there was another version of this that referred naturopathic physicians in a place under their own statute to one that they are.
I believe we will hear presentations from folks who, since these were drafted, would like a final tweak. So probably what we're going to have to do is do one other adjustment. We will probably have to have a dash three. I think what's before the committee today is, do you want the ones or the twos? In other words, do you want the doctors of naturopathic medicine included in the definition of physician? So that, I think that's our first item to determine, and then we will hear from folks who worked on this that since this has come out of LC, and I want to praise Lori Freeman for turning this around very quickly, as all good bills, there's a few tweaks, and one of those is if you include the naturopathic physicians, how they're laid out in the bill needs some work. So,
all right. We'll have some invited testimony. Who wants to talk? Who wants to be invited? Mr. Holt?
So I was hoping Scott Ekblad and Phil Donovan and Doug Barber.
And Tom Holt? And anybody else?
Phil Donovan. Well, Tom wasn't on the actual work group, but I think he has feedback.
He has something that he would like to add to.
So the folks on the work group were Doug Barber, Scott Ekblad, Phil Donovan was in on that, also Jonathan Eames, but he is not here.
Right.
685.
Are you here for him? Oh.
All right. Let's have any three of you folks. Let's go.
Okay.
The first three that can get here.
That's close.
See if okay. They can count.
I have up to the chair, so.
Yeah.
They all have multiple things to say. They all worked on different parts.
Okay.
So.
Let's hear them all. Scott, why don't you speak?
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the director of the Oregon Office of Rural Health, which is located at OHSU. And I think I can comfortably say that I'm representing OHSU's point of view here today, as well as the Office of Rural Health. Sort of a 30-foot overview. 3639 was not acceptable to a lot of different people, and we saw an opportunity since the existing loan repayment program had been defunded during the last session to accomplish both the goals of 3639 and the goal of keeping the existing loan repayment program alive by essentially funding the existing loan repayment program instead. So we did work with the originators of House Bill 3639 and brought to you the amendments that you see before you today. There are a couple amendments that I thought were going to, or I should say a couple points that I thought were going to be included in these amendments that I don't see at the moment. One is that on page 3, lines 14 and 15, it talks about a...
Which amendment are you looking at?
I'm sorry, dash ones.
Thank you.
Can we just stick to the dash ones right now?
Sure.
Because then people aren't going back and forth.
Yeah, it talks about devoting a certain percentage of resources to rural communities and a certain percentage to urban communities, and where I think everyone agrees an appropriate split is 75% to rural, 25% to urban. We had wanted it expressed in terms of the dollars being distributed and not necessarily people, because there are some people that have relatively small debt loads and other people that have relatively large debt loads. It just seems a little more workable to talk about distribution of dollar resources rather than people. The second one...
Scott, what do you mean everybody agrees on that split? Who's everybody?
Well, the originators of House Bill 3639, some of the legislators that I spoke to about this, the Hospital Association.
Do you have the new dash one, Scott?
If there's more than one dash version, ones? I don't know if there.
Well,
if I have
there was one. There was an original version before it had gone through editing. The reason I asked is the reference you just made. We were all confused because I think
it looks like it's on page 5, the bottom of page 5. Not
there was a pre-edited version that had been circulated, but now we have one from that's the official.
Mr. Chair, version. Members of the committee, my apologies. I was not looking at the newest version of the amendment.
Because I do think it actually gets to your issue, Scott.
Yeah, it says just what you're saying.
But you wouldn't have known that because you hadn't seen the final. So that's okay.
Okay, very good.
So we're talking page 5, line 26.
The other point that I wanted to bring up is that this is a program that was defunded in 2009. And so even though it does still exist because there are recipients of loan repayment who have a second, a third, and a fourth year of payments left to go, they're serving their obligated time, there is no funds available for administration of the program. And so this program would move the existing loan repayment program from Oregon Student Assistance Commission to the Office of Rural Health. I had wanted this to take effect fiscal year 11-12 when there may be new resources for the program and not immediately, because then essentially a program would be switched over to our office where we have no administrative resources to do the work.
In fact, colleagues, you'll probably remember in the session we had heard that OSAC transfer bill. And so the bolded items starting on page 7 are related to the transfer of what was the Rural Health Services Program from OSAC, Oregon Student Assistance Commission, to the Office of Rural Health. But that program is being renamed with this amendment. Scott's concern is the start date of the transfer?
Correct. The effective date, yeah.
Is that in section 17?
It's actually the very last paragraph. Section 18.
I think what Scott is saying, he would prefer not to have a transfer date operational. What would be a preferred operational date, Scott?
Fiscal year 11-12.
Doesn't this, Mr. Chair, may I?
Yes, please.
Reading, section 17 says that section 6, which is the transfer, takes place 6 through 11. Section 6 is the transfer section. It becomes operative on July 1, 2011.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harker, thank you. I hadn't read section 17 yet.
Let me make a point. Tomorrow's the last day we can work on this bill. So I think if we want to move this to Ways and Means, we're not going to be tinkering with a lot of details at this point. We'll either move it to Ways and Means, or we won't move it to Ways and Means. But I think some of these details will best be handled in Ways and Means if it moves beyond there. So my preference is for your testimony not to start again as if we were back in 2007 when we first started talking about this, and not to be doing too much tinkering, because we move it to Ways and Means today, we move it to Ways and Means tomorrow, or it dies. That's where we are. Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unless I'm completely lost my mind, and there are people who believe that, I can't imagine that this bill is going to Ways and Means or Revenue and going to be funded this month. And with all the questions and whatnot, it seems to me like it might be better, I totally support loan repayment, no question about that, to put this off to January, work out the rest of the bug, get the sideboards we want in it, and have a possibility, if the economy has totally reversed itself, to fund it. I'm not sure sending it to Ways and Means with the expectation of funding right now is rational. That was harsh.
Oh, it's not harsh.
Good representative, as someone who sits on Ways and Means, I completely understand that concern. I think when the last time we were trying to move this, it was not in any state we would want it to go to Ways and Means on the off chance it did get funded.
Yeah.
And so I was convinced by talking to some folks that, well, to keep this conversation going, let's correct the bill, let's improve the bill, let's say, what are we actually trying to say with this, and send it to Ways and Means so it becomes that starting point if it does receive no funding, which is very likely with the revenue forecast as it is this week. But create a vehicle that is better, much better than the previous bill, and send it to Ways and Means. But I hear your concern.
But we would, if it isn't funded, am I not correct that it would start over again in January?
Correct.
I'm just trying to be very sympathetic toward Ways and Means, and I don't want this misinterpreted. I really support this bill. I'm just sensing we're not quite there yet. It's not going to get funded, and maybe we could help everybody out by simply putting this in our January file folder, item number 1, or something like that. Unless I'm missing something, I'm flexible.
And all I would say is, and I think you're making good points, I would ask for the indulgence and the patience of the committee. And I know Scott's hampered by the fact that he we just got these amendments out of LC. Yeah. I actually think we're very close. The two issues you've just raised, we've corrected. I think whatever changes we have to do will be minor, so maybe we could stick to the content unless you're sure that we haven't, you know, not addressed another issue. But
No, Chair Greenlich, members of the committee, now learning that my concerns have been corrected, I'm fine with the bill as is. And of course, it's up, you know, it's up to this body to decide at what time to do what work. But
Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians, and with me is Dr. Julie Chinnock. She is a primary care provider at Outside In, which helps homeless youth with health care issues, along with some other populations. And I wanted to have a professional at the table with me in case you had questions of the profession itself. I'm here to speak in support of the -1 amendment, which includes the naturopathic profession. We think that that will help communities address the patient access problems that they currently endure. As you know, the Washington State program includes naturopathic physicians in their state loan repayment program, and I just wanted to share a couple of pieces about that information that I shared with you the last time we met. And the first is that we researched the program and we found that the Washington program has placed over a dozen naturopathic physicians in both rural and medically underserved communities. And they've been able to do so and arrive at this by undertaking a couple of strategic initiatives. First, they've had an outreach program to target rural healthcare conferences to help educate those communities about the naturopathic profession. Secondly, they have a program that initiates site visits to ensure that a naturopathic physician is going to be sustainable in a given community. And importantly, to date, no naturopathic physicians have defaulted within the Washington Loan Program. And finally, they've got a criteria that helps ensure the right provider mix in a community. You know, not to be overly broad, but in other words, they're working to ensure that they're going to put naturopathic physicians where they're going to succeed, not in a community where, say, an emergency room doctor is needed. So with that, I also wanted just to say to the broader bill, we're supportive of the inclusion of House Bill 2581 from last session, moving that into it. I think an important sideboard that wasn't mentioned earlier is that now, you know, in the original legislation, you didn't know how many years or what was the requirements. Now the legislation is specific, 5 years, eligible for loan repayment for 5 years with a 3-year commitment. Increased the dollar value. You heard at the last hearing that $10,000 was not going to be competitive with other states. This legislation lifts that to $25,000. So there was some good work that was done on this. And in particular, we also believe it appropriately focuses the primary care resources to rural communities where it's needed most. So finally, I'd just like to point out that there is an amendment that we have discussed with the Oregon Medical Association that we think is an appropriate change. You'll see that both professions in the -1 amendment are defined as physician. And we presume that that was done as a matter of convenience by legislative counsel. But you can see all the different professions in this draft are articulated separately, and we think it would be appropriate to separate our professions within this. And I don't mean to raise the ire of the chairman with a small change, but we think it's an important change and an appropriate change because while both medical docs and naturopathic physicians are primary care providers, so are nurse practitioners and physician assistants. So we think that that should be, at some point, I want to get on the record, that should be separated. And with that, I'll close, and both of us would like to be available to any questions. But we urge the adoption of the -1s, and we urge the movement of this bill to Ways and Means, where we can hopefully live to fight another day.
Thank you. My sense is we're going to have another amendment on tomorrow. Is that right?
If it seems that we need to make some tweaks, Mr. Chair, you know, I understand the concern of the professions around lines 17, 18, and 19 on the -1, page 1. It does, to some degree, say whichever licensed practitioner under those different ORSs. There seems to be some concern about putting all those types of doctors in one paragraph. I don't think it would impact the fiscal, no.
Okay. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wait, actually, I have one question for Mr. Ekblad, if that's all right.
That'd be wonderful.
Great. I just have a question when you're talking about what areas would qualify someone for tuition reimbursement. On the second page, line 18, said an urban practice site providing health care services to patients who are enrolled in Medicare or the state's medical assistance program or who don't have health insurance coverage. I work with a number of primary care practitioners that donate care to people who are uninsured, but who have very thriving practices and do not serve underserved populations in urban areas in general. So I'm a little concerned that this sort of leaves things wide open where, you know, we're, not to pick on Lake Oswego or South Eugene, but we're paying for tuition for primary care practitioners that are serving in South Eugene and Lake Oswego instead of really getting them to the underserved populations.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Hoyle, we're happy to administer the program. Should this bill pass, we're happy to administer the program under whatever guidance we're given. We certainly, however, in determining who gets the awards, do prioritize based on level of underservice. But if it's preferable to have that as part of the statute, that's fine with me.
Follow-up question?
Yes.
So I just wonder why it's or and not and. You know, Medicaid, OHP, or uninsured as opposed to and?
I'm not sure I have a good answer for you. If you were to use the word and, then there'd also have to be additional language to acknowledge the fact that OBGYNs don't see Medicare patients. That's really the only issue.
I'd like to comment on that. That really triggers a comment. I was going to save it, but why don't we excuse this panel and get the next panel started up?
All right, thank you.
And I'll make the comment while they're moving. I am not impressed that the shortage of primary care is a rural issue or an issue of underserved populations. Frankly, a person on Medicare's doctor in Lake Oswego retires, and that person is not going to be able to find a primary care doc. And I think, while I have great sympathy for the problems of the needs of rural areas, and they are very intensive, I think our basic problem, and I will oppose in the next session a bill that only deals with rural health care needs. I think the primary care shortage is dramatic and acute, and it's everywhere, and we need to be doing something that increases the supply of primary care docs, at which point I think the rising tide will raise all ships, and I think we need to take such steps as, for example, doubling the amount of primary care residencies we have in the state and other kinds of things that will have a very dramatic impact on that. Yes?
Now that I'm reading that section, I want to just follow up. I think I agree with your points about the lack of or the need for primary care providers in urban areas as well. I think the challenge here is we were trying to make sure that the descriptor here is of the patients, so it would be hard to say that a patient might be Medicare and OHP and, you know, so, but I think the point you're saying is you want to make sure that these urban sites at least, maybe at minimum, are serving OHP patients, for example, because you're concerned if it was just uninsured, it could be potentially a pretty well-off clinic. They never ever see a Medicare or a Medicaid patient. So I don't know if we want to create a baseline at minimum. If you're an urban clinic, you've got to be serving OHP clients, but it could also be Medicare, it could be other things. I don't know if that's, I'd have to, but I think that's your concern is.
That is my concern. And then just a follow-up comment, Chair Greenlick. I agree that there is, we do not have capacity in primary care. However, I will have to say, and we have populations, both urban and rural, that are underserved. I have parts of my district that are definitely rural, but do not qualify as rural under the OHSU, under the normal guidelines, because they're too close to an urban area. But Junction City, as you know, that is definitely rural. People don't go there to practice, but it's too close to Eugene to be considered rural. But the fact of the matter is that as much as capacity for primary care there's a shortage of capacity in urban areas. The shortage in rural areas is much more dire, and we do have to do something to give people an incentive to practice in areas that they don't traditionally serve in. And that's, for me, it's really, really important that we can't just fill the pipeline, do it in the cities first, and not think about the rest of Oregon.
Well, I think all those things are true, but I think a Medicare patient that can't find a primary care doc is a problem to me.
I agree.
And we need to figure out how to deal with that problem.
Some more points.
Okay. Gentlemen.
Representative Greenlick, members of the committee, Doug Barber here today on behalf of the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians. I'm handing out written testimony from Dr. Elizabeth Steiner that tries to address some of the issues that Representative Kotek and Representative Hoyle have talked about. First of all, let me say that we think that these amendments are a dramatic improvement over what the original bill was and are very supportive of the time and energy and the direction that this is going. Three specific concerns, and they have to do with those sideboards. The first is that issue that Representative Hoyle was just talking about, the language about Medicaid, Medicare, or uninsured. There was a solution, we believe, to that issue in 2007. You remember you passed a reform of the rural liability subsidy program. And there is language in that bill that everybody agreed on that said that the practice must be open to Medicare and Medicaid and under uninsured patients in the proportion that they exist in their community. And so it's a way of getting at that the practices can't just see two uninsured patients and say, I qualify. They have to be open to Medicare. They have to be open to Medicaid and uninsured. We think we could take that language. It may require a couple of little tweaks in legislative council, but we could use that as the model for this section. The second is for those urban practices. We think the language for the rural practices works. The sideboard for urban, there just isn't anything in the bill that talks about preference or for practices that serve historically underserved populations. And we understand in having some conversations with Scott Ekblad that it's tricky to find the right definition for how to get there, but we think some language or direction could be added to the bill that would give the Office of Rural Health the direction that they should give preference to those, to physicians, nurse practitioners, or PAs who are serving in those underserved areas. And finally, on the naturopathic physician addition to the bill, we would support the -2 amendments. I didn't even know they existed until today. We have concern. Our physicians have concerns about the range of need that exists, particularly in rural areas, not just covering the clinic, but also taking shifts in ER, covering call, covering hospital, which we understand that naturopathic physicians would not be able to do. And a lot of time and energy is being put into creating new standards for primary care medical home. And that is the direction that we're trying to help push primary care and medicine in the state. We think the Oregon Health Authority is going there. We think the legislature is going to be going there. And the information I received from members of the committee that helped develop those standards is they don't believe naturopathic physicians would meet those standards. And so it just seems we just don't think that we with the limited dollars we may have for loan repayment, that we should be providing incentives or paying what could be a lot of money to folks who can't meet the basic standards that we're trying to incent. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I think you heard our concern the other day about just the lack of funding for the program as it now stands, let alone revamping it. That said, between the two sets of amendments, we would strongly prefer to work off of the dash twos with some tweaks. The fact of the matter is that we need to get personnel in primary care, and in the rural areas in particular, we need those practitioners to be able to cover call in hospitals, be able to cover ER. They do a lot of things that they may not necessarily do if they're in, say, Beaverton. And so for that reason, nothing against the naturopaths, we don't think they belong in this particular program. The tweaks that we would suggest, and I had conversations with Mr. Eames on behalf of the proponents as recently as a couple of hours ago. One would be this issue of the and versus or on Medicaid, Medicare, and uninsured. We believe strongly that it should be an and. And you know, Mr. Eames seemed to be agreeable to that, but I'll let him speak for himself or his proxy speak for him. So we think we could work that out. We would prefer to see other sideboards, whether it's done by policy or rule or done in statute. The malpractice language is certainly worth a quick look if that would be easily adapted, but strong direction that, hey, if you're going to get state money, then you have an obligation to serve, you know, not just one cash-paying patient who walks through the door, but other uninsured people and Medicaid and so on. So that there's some strong direction on that. We're pleased with the fix on the 75% being dollars rather than individuals. That was a concern that we had on a prior version of this that we had seen. I won't say that we will be enthusiastically supportive of this. We have great concern that this has been done in a bit of a rush in this short session, and it's an important issue. We appreciate the attention to it, but we also think it's worthy of longer extended conversation. And Chair Greenlee, you and I spoke about it, you know, grander schemes for encouraging people to go into primary care. You know, there are a lot of ideas that I think are worth looking at as we move toward 2011. With that, I'll be happy to take questions.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Greenlee, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Hudson. I'm part of PAC West here today on behalf of Mr. Eames, who is unfortunately not here, and the Coalition for a Healthy Oregon. I have been authorized to say that we've been working very hard since the last hearing to resolve as many issues as possible, and John has indicated that it looks like the dash twos would be preferable to COHO at this time, but we would be willing to work as hard as we can between now and tomorrow's hearing to resolve any outstanding issues in the interest of moving this bill forward.
Testimony moves me to make a comment I probably shouldn't be making, but I'm surprised it's such a short session. I'm how frustrated I am with the interprofessional rivalries that seem to go on. MDs versus naturopaths, psychologists versus psychiatrists, optometrists versus ophthalmologists. Massage therapist versus physiotherapist or something like this. I mean, it is just, we have created these silos and created such heavy bricks around them that it seems very hard for professions to see beyond the threat of somebody else coming into their territory. And it just seems to me that as long as we're blinded by this kind of interprofessional rivalry and silos, that we're going to have a very difficult time creating the workforce of the future, which is what I hope in this session, the next session, we really begin thinking about. And we turn these issues almost into political issues. If count the votes, and if I win, you lose, and if you win, I lose. And it causes me a great deal of distress. Take that for what it may.
Hear, hear.
Representative Thompson.
I find myself in the painful position of agreeing with the chairman, which we don't often agree, or we seldom disagree, we often disagree, put it that way. I guess I'm just bothered by the tone of this kind of thing, and I can understand the arguments to some degree, but I don't see any language in here that says that a physician just so described here has to participate in hospital or emergency room duties. I know a general practitioner who chooses not to and does not and operates a general practice in a small community. If that's an important distinguishing fact, then we should put it in here, that that's an expectation for persons or people under this program. And if it's true that that is important and naturopaths do not fulfill that, then that should be an important thing in here, I believe.
Next issue. Well, maybe
we'll put it to Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much.
May I just briefly, I think that some of the information that Mr. Donovan has found in Washington State is helpful here because in a lot of these programs, it depends on what the community is looking for. Clearly, a community that's going to need a physician who has can run an emergency room is not going to probably want a naturopath. But if we're in an urban clinic, I know the doctor here serves in an outside inn in downtown Portland. There are lots of other folks who can handle those things, but they're in need of primary care services. And if we adjust the definition of urban practice, a person like her could be able to provide that primary care in that setting. So there's nothing here that would say, you're just going to have naturopaths sucking up all the money. So I think we should just be clear that a lot of this is based on what the site that's interested is hiring this person for, and whether or not they would then be appropriate for the program. So there are a lot of things involved, not just what that person wants. So,
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reflecting on your comments a few minutes ago, especially when you were describing the silos that we have. This comment is really more general about the nature of healthcare, not necessarily only to this bill. But in thinking about how our healthcare system has evolved and how it is organized, instead of feeling like, as a consumer, as someone who may need healthcare at some time, instead of feeling like a person would have a team of people out there who may work either individually or together as a team to help improve the health of this person, solve an immediate crisis, or do something about the long-term, to benefit the long-term health. Instead of working as a team, it feels more like a consumer is in the position of choosing. How do you figure out what it is you need and what's the right person to go to, because not everyone has a base or a home for health care? How do you work your way through this system of knowing what kind of something ist or a gist or whatever the ending is on the profession? How do you know who it is you should go see, and then you're really on your own to figure out, do you need to see someone else, because you're not sure that anyone works with someone else as a team to help you?
Then find out if they'll take you when you get there.
Yeah.
I'm going to close this work session on House Bill 3639. If tomorrow we have something we have ready and want to move to Ways and Means, we'll do it tomorrow.
We might need to make some decision if I am to get some amendments drafted and trying to. Can we maybe come back to this at the later in the committee hearing?
Yeah, we'll have some open discussion about this again.
Okay. Because I have some notes of things that if we were to draft another amendment, I would need to see some heads nodding from the group that those are the things that we need to get drafted. And so if we were going to have any chance of making any changes before tomorrow. So.
All right. Let's have an open discussion when we're done. Madam Minister, will tell me whether I need to reopen the work session to do that.
Yeah.
Or whether I can just do it under the good note. Yeah. Put in the order.
I think you're absolutely right.
business to the bill.
Can I open it up?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then we will be back to this before we're done. I would like to open a work session on House Bill 3663. And Administrator, will you tell us about that? Wait a minute, is that right? Yes. Will you please tell us about that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3663 allows minors 15 years of age or older to consent to a diagnosis or treatment by an optometrist without consent of the parent or guardian of that minor. It allows the optometrist to provide the diagnosis or the treatment to the minor without the consent of the parent or guardian, provided they are acting within the scope of their practice for an optometrist. Mr. Chair, we have a no fiscal or revenue impact on this bill.
We have a statement that says that.
Correct. We do have a statement.
Can I have a motion on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3663 with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
Is there discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair, I thought the Dash 3 amendment was appropriate. It was acceptable to both sides, and for the life of me, don't fully understand why we can't have a discussion about the Dash 3s. I'm sorry. I apologize. The Dash 1s.
Yes.
But
you can discuss them.
No, I'm wondering. I mean, we had a young man who came up with an idea. It was a reasonable idea. The idea was acceptable to both of the professions, and we've laid it aside. We essentially laid that on the table, and I just don't know. So.
Okay. Any other discussion on House Bill 3663?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just briefly, I would like to thank my student, Theo Buchanan, who's got his head in a book but is now looking up, for his help on this bill, and appreciate that we're going to have an opportunity to move it to the floor. Theo and his classmates have followed this closely, and I think are generally, well, I shouldn't speak for them, I think they're generally supportive of the idea of giving 15, 16, and 17-year-olds more access to eye care. I know I share that desire as well, and look forward to moving this along to the floor.
Thank you. Okay. Other discussion? Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I certainly understand the need to have parental notification being part of this, and I'm sympathetic to the work that's been done on that, but I go back to something I think I said once before. I can't imagine that being a game-ending issue, because we have obvious other control points. A teenager going into an optometrist is not going to be likely to pay that bill. Their parents are. And if they're given a prescription, they're not likely to fill it at the pharmacy and pay for it. Their parents will. And I think there are sideboards on this that an optometrist would have to really have some devious reason to try to obscure the parents from finding out about this, because he or she is not going to get paid. And so there's some control function in there. And I have to weigh that against my district. We have optometrists, we have no ophthalmologists. It's the only entry point for the kid who scratches or thinks they scratch their eye on the soccer field and somebody thinks they need immediate attention. I would hope if the student comes in with their eyeball hanging out, that would automatically go to the emergency room in an ambulance. So again, I think there's a lot of common sense stuff built in here, and I understand both sides of that argument, but I would be willing to go along with this.
And for the record, we do in the bill give optometrists the right to contact parents.
Yeah, no, I would encourage optometrists to be very smart about that and police themselves, lest we have this discussion in another year over some other issue.
I guess I'd also like to let's put on the record, I probably have more ophthalmologists per square inch than than any other district. It's both the Deaver's Eye Clinic and St. Vincent's in my district. But the I received a lot of mail from ophthalmologists, a lot of email from ophthalmologists, and my impression was most of the concern by ophthalmologists was about the scope of practice of optometrists, not about the 15, 16, 17-year-old consent. And that's not in this bill, and that's not what's being discussed here. Are we ready for roll call? Please, Debbie.
Representative Rune is excused. Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative Coyle.
Aye.
Representative Kinnamer.
Aye.
Representative Kotak.
Aye.
Representative Nathanson.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer.
Aye.
Chair Greenlee.
Aye. Motion passes. We could use a
carrier.
Oh, yes. Use a carrier? Somebody want to?
I'll move.
Oh, good. Good. Your students can watch you give a speech on it. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Representative Cannon would be the carrier. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3663 and open a work session for the purpose of hearing from.
Oh, they left.
The revenue people left?
Yes.
Can you
get them
back?
Yeah.
I do want to open up a work session on 3603 for discussion of an amendment, and particularly for the fiscal, getting some information on the revenue of that amendment. The amendment is at the request of AFLAC. It's a request to remove accident-only insurance from the insurance premium. I have a suspicion it's going to be the same problem we have with this other, that the revenue will be significantly high, that we probably, that revenue committee won't let us send it to them. But I did want to get on the record what the fiscal is and then get some guidance from the revenue committee before tomorrow. So if we'll just stand at ease for a moment.
Okay, can we continue this since we have the revenue in front of us?
Sure.
Do we?
Yeah.
Do we have the dash ones in front of us too?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Let's open a work session for us to have some discussion. Let's wait till the administrator is back. Sandy, can you join us?
Sorry.
I'm going to open a work session on 3603, and would you describe what the dash one amendment is to 3603, which we have copies of, right?
Yes, I better check.
Okay.
I thought
we have.
We think
okay,
we
good,
have.
Good. And we just put them out in the audience. Good. Got something right, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The House Bill 3603-1 amendment is our classic gut and stuff, and it replaces the original bill. And what it is doing is it exempts the accident-only insurance from the premium assessment for the Healthcare for All Oregon Children Program premium.
And Sandy, does it already have a subsequent to revenue?
Well, the original bill went to Ways and Means, but because we do have a revenue statement on the dash one, I would assume that we would have to add a revenue referral onto this bill should the committee choose to take action on the amendment and the bill.
That's my impression as well.
And Day is on his way down.
Hey, why don't you step up and tell us about the dash one amendments?
Fabulous amendment, Chairman.
Should we even bother to discuss it or just pass it?
No. I want you to feel good about it, sir. Ted Hughes representing AFLAC. As you recall, those of you that were here last session, when you funded the Oregon Health Authority, you did it with House Bill 2116. And the policy that was made at the time the people Form 2116 was that all health insurance policies must pay. Well, in that debate, we were never a part of it. We were never part of 2009 because we are not a health insurance company. If you recall, it was about 3 years in the making, this bill. And they had some legislators that were part of the program. Your chairman was one of them. In the debate, as I understand it, at the end of the session, the last 6 days of the session, the Revenue Committee, the bill was in the Revenue Committee, there were amendments offered, and it changed the definition of health insurance to capture three of our supplemental insurance programs.
Three of your six.
Three out of the six. We have three of them that are presently exempt in the exempt column, and these three were not exempt. Now, apparently the reason they weren't exempt, I didn't do a good enough job with individuals involved to convince them that we were not health insurance. Since then, I have convinced, I think, the majority of them that, yes, you shouldn't have been involved in helping fund the health authority bill because you're not part of it. However, we will take care of it later. Once we discovered that in the last session, we went to Chairman Bates, your chairman. We went to Mary Nolan, the people that were directly involved, Representative Kotek, and tried to make our case that, hey, don't put us in there. You leave us in the exempt list because we are not health insurance. And we were not involved. We were not at the table when this whole bill was drafted because we were not health insurance. So it was an accident. It was a mistake. I have no idea. I don't think it was premeditated. I think the people that actually put us in the bill actually believed that we were health insurance. So that's the kind of a tiny background that we have here. Your chairman has been gracious enough to say that he believes now, can I quote you, Mr. Chairman, that accident only is definitely not a health insurance product. The other two, I have not been able to convince him. There are two other articles. I have not been able to convince him that they're not health insurance, and that's not your fault. That's my fault. So apparently I did not make it a good enough case that they were not health insurance. They are not classified as health insurance in the federal bill, in Obama's health care bill, or anywhere else. These policies are supplemental insurance. You know how they work, or should I have told you in how it happens? If you have a specific disease policy that Aflac sells, and you catch that disease, or however you get it, the company, once you're diagnosed, pays you a cash money fee every day that you are diagnosed, and that money goes to you. It has nothing to do with your medical care. You can use that for your to pay your rent, for your car payment, or whatever. At your discretion, that money does not go to hospitals or doctors or any place else.
And as background, the insurance division has excluded by rule accidental death and dismemberment from this, which they did this session.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing that up. And we maintain that the insurance division could also, by rule, do what we're asking you to do today. And I understand the fisco is around $275,000.
We'll hear about that in a moment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from the insurance division as to why they may not have excluded accident?
They were willing to talk, and we could move. I mean, we could hear from them.
It would just suggest there's another side to the story, and there may not be, but.
They were here earlier. I don't know where they went.
Yeah, but we can get them back for tomorrow. There are two sides. There are two sets of issues in this, and that's, it turns out that accident only has two different kinds of policies. Aflac has about half of the market with this cash only. You have an accident, you get so much money. The other half is much more traditional health insurance, where if you have an accident, it pays for your hospital and your other services, much more like health insurance. So there's a little bit of untangling in this. But I have heard from the Insurance Division, they feel that under their definition of health insurance, this should be covered. But we'll ask Ms. Miller to join us tomorrow if we carry this further. Let's hear about the fiscal. I mean, about the revenue.
Chair Greenlee, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Back, Legislative Revenue Office. We work closely with DCBS Insurance Division, and policy matters are yours, and we work off whatever there is on the bill. And it is our conclusion that that accident only insurance was interpreted in the bill. So in our projection for House Bill 2116 in the regular session, we included this accident only insurance. So this amendment to House Bill 3603 will create exemption for accident-only insurance from the assessment. And you see our revenue impact for 2010-11 fiscal year. We have $275,000. And then full impact will be felt in 11-13, which is 1.2 million. And then because of sunset, 13 to 15 will have limited revenue impact. And that's what we have for you.
That's because of the sunset.
That's because of the sunset.
For your sunset. Yes. So if we extended it, the assumption would be something like the 1.2 or 1.3 million dollars.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions of Mr. Back?
This question may be for Mr. Hughes. I don't know whether he can answer it, but how much of this revenue projection does Aflac's product represent? I'm trying to get a sense of whether, as you describe accident-only insurance, that's really the universe of accident-only insurance, or whether there are a bunch of other carriers and maybe our revenue staff has.
Ms. Miller told me that Aflac represented about half of that market.
Okay.
Is that your feeling?
That's true, Mr. Chairman. And what you said is also true. There are some accident policies that act like insurance policies. We don't have any of those. And you could clarify that by saying accident indemnity accident policies that are indemnified, such as Safe or something in that. More like a disability company than you are a health insurance company.
Exactly. Mr. Hughes said he couldn't convince me. It was he and three national vice presidents that couldn't convince me, so it wasn't his failing alone. Yes, Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hughes, some companies, associations, et cetera, that are providers of care that were subject to the 1% have increased rates by that 1%. Has Aflac increased rates by 1% on these policies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harker, we have not. We cannot recover that 1% cost because our policy, the company philosophy is, and the policy is that it's a guaranteed flat rate. If you buy it at 18 years old, it's the same price when you're 65. We never increase the premium, so we cannot recapture like the other health insurance companies can.
Thank you. Follow-up? So then, if this were to pass, there would be no reasonable expectation on the part of Aflac customers that they would then see a decrease because there has been no increase, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harker, that's correct, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, then I think this is the only part of the market where the 1% was not passed on. Here we go. Representative Thompson.
If Mr. Hughes runs into me with his Cadillac and injures me, and I go back on his insurance company for my hospital bill, does that make his auto insurance company a medical plan?
Mr. Hughes, are you asking me?
Yes.
Well, I'm just,
I would say sure, and maybe we ought to get safe.
It seems to me we're really far afield, if I understand Aflac correctly, if they do not pay on medical claims, physicians, doctors, hospital, but not. By what measure can we make them a health insurance plan, or inversely, should any insurance company that ever paid a medical claim under lawsuit or however be included under this tent? I think we have to draw a line here somewhere, folks, on who's in the medical insurance business and who's, you know.
We have drawn a line. What Mr. Hughes is trying to do is to get us to change the line.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm seeing is it looks like we've got one company stuck under this thing, and we either ought to put them all in or take this one out. You know, I can see a lot of revenue reasons to put them all in, but that's not, it doesn't seem fair to me. I think, although they're close, it occurs to me they do not fit the meaning or practice of a health insurance company. They're not writing a check, and there's no sideboard saying the money they give me, I have to pay my doctor. It's a salary replacement kind of policy.
Except you can stay and work. You don't have it differs from disability in that you don't have to be out of work in order to get the benefit. You automatically get it.
I'm missing the connection between Aflac and healthcare. Right.
That's been Mr. Hughes' argument. Yes, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And not to put the good chair on the spot, but if you look at the bill and we look at the things that have been excluded from the premium tax, we can have a long conversation of why some of these things were excluded. Who's insurance, who's not.
Yeah, we're going to have some of that discussion tomorrow, in fact, with the Senate bill.
Yes, we will. And I am sympathetic to Mr. Hughes. He came and talked to me about this. I know you've been working on this for a while. I am now in a conundrum. I now see a revenue impact on changing this. We have just expanded who gets covered under these dollars. Almost very, now, not so much for this biennium, but next biennium, if the revenue impact for 11-13 is $1.2 million, we're sending a bill to Ways and Means that costs $1.75. So I'm in kind of a tough spot because I want that other bill to pass. I think it would be very difficult to do this bill and that bill and not have someone say there's a problem. And while I am sympathetic to Aflac, I had an Aflac policy at one time, I'm going to have to go with the kids. So I'm in a real conundrum. I understand from a policy perspective this is a nice intellectual conversation, but there's a revenue impact in taking you out.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kotek, I'm sympathetic. I'm just talking fairness here. Mm-hmm. If you're not a health insurance company, you shouldn't be involved in the mm-hmm. bill. I don't believe the impact will be that severe. I think the fiscal is pretty close to what the impact is, but that's out of $800 million. And that's, I don't know what percentage that is, but it's tiny, tiny. To make things fair, it's a small cost.
And to follow up, if we're to be consistent, there are clearly things that are excluded that are health insurance. So in some ways, what we really need, and this is really a 2011 discussion, I think, is a full-blown discussion of what has been excluded. I mean, if we're going to go there, I mean, because again, I worry about who else is going to come and say, well, I don't watch that, and we could be having this conversation over and over again while we have anticipated using those dollars for certain things. So
we will have two bills from the Senate in the next 2 days that take people out of this.
True, Mr. Chair, but the one that I know is coming from the Senate was one that had an indeterminate revenue impact because of the nature of those dollars. And
no, it didn't have an indeterminate revenue impact. It was not included in the original revenue. But now that it's in, it will reduce revenue, and I'm going to ask them to help us get a sense on how much revenue it might reduce now that it's included. Their statement was, well, we didn't count this to begin with, so therefore it has no revenue impact. My argument would be, well, maybe we didn't count it, but it's there now and there's money there, and taking it away will take away some money, and it'll be very similar to this, I think.
And I'm going to have the same problem then, Mr. Chair. And my understanding last time is we weren't able to track it. So apparently we are now able to track that to some degree.
Well, no, I don't know if we'll have that.
I know that's a different bill. Sorry to bring up a different bill.
But be prepared on that one, because we'll be back, I think, tomorrow, and then again on Monday with two different ones. Good. Okay, yes. Representative Nathan.
Mr. Chair, I don't know who to address this question to, other committee members or Mr. Hughes or someone else. I'm trying to understand a little more about who's buying this kind of a policy and whether they buy this policy in conjunction with other things that we call health insurance policies, if this is a substitute or a complement to that. And I guess when we're talking about the philosophy of is this or is this not health insurance, is this sometimes used by some people as instead of buying a health insurance plan, which is a very complicated thing to figure out as a consumer as well as to administer, is this just a substitute? Just give me the money and I'll figure out how to pay it if I need to take advantage of it.
Representative Nathan, that's certainly my impression. I mean, my impression is there are people who buy, say, cancer insurance and think they've bought health insurance. And whether it's marketed that way or not, Mr. Hughes and his colleagues and I have had those discussions, but it's my impression that certainly the other two things are really health insurance, even though they pay a fixed amount per day. That's one person's opinion. That's not a, you can have your own opinion. It's also my opinion that accident insurance is a little different. I think it sort of is. We did exclude disability, formal disability insurance, three lines. It is also my impression that when I talk to the revenue chair, he's going to tell me, don't send it to us because it's not going to get by us, and I'll have an answer by that. And if that's the case, Mr. Hughes knows it will die here, and we'll be back talking about it again in an honest way as a part of an overall look at things in 2011 as we rehash all this.
Yes, just a comment. I'm thinking of about a relative who is a professional, actually an endodontist, a root canal specialist, makes a very substantial amount of money in this profession, and has both a health insurance policy and a disability policy to protect his family in the event that he either dies or is disabled. And it wouldn't take a great deal to disable someone who has to perform at that high level of skill. I don't think there's anything in there that is about paying for health care. It's about providing for his family in the event there were some problem.
Well, but they sell disability insurance, as Frank disability insurance, and that is not included here. That was excluded, right?
Yes.
What were your three lines that were excluded?
Three lines that were not...
That were not included in this.
Not included were the one we're talking about now. And also specified disease.
No, I mean, which ones were excluded?
Long-term care was included as exempt. What are the other two?
Disability.
Medicare Part D plans, Medicare Advantage plans, dental plans, vision only, dental only.
Dental, vision, all of those were included.
I would just add that, to say this is completely a policy choice might be reading into it a bit.
Well, okay. The revenue forecast is based upon a premise, and I heard the good doctor that heads the Department of Human Resources say this yesterday, that they haven't any idea how many people, if they're going to reach the 80,000 goal, how many people are included, and how much money is going to be collected. Those are still unknown. So. I'd like to be an unknown quantity, too.
Mr. Chair, I began this conversation trying to figure out, A, what accident-only insurance is, and then, B, understand whether or not that's health insurance in the attempt to see whether we correctly or incorrectly categorized it. But as I sort of searched online, I'm finding all kinds of different definitions of accident insurance. I have one here that says accident insurance may also refer to a health insurance plan that covers medical costs associated with an accident. Well, then you start to sound like health insurance. Yeah. And so I'm sort of gravitating towards Representative Kotek's conclusion that, you know, we've got to look at the dollars here and perhaps, you know, respect the agreement, whether it was perfectly fair, whether we cut that exactly on the lines or not in 2009, respect the work and the agreement that was reached then, but we'll see where things head.
Mr. Chairman, there's a gentleman here from Georgia, all the way from Columbus, Georgia.
All the way to talk to us?
Aflac's corporate headquarters. He could answer that question.
Please bring him up. Mr. Beck, thank you very much.
There you go. Thank you.
Appreciate that. I'm sorry we kept you waiting before.
He can tell you exactly how these work.
I need to tell you that your representative has been working very hard on your behalf.
Yes, and we appreciate that. We appreciate your time and listening to him. My name's Gary Allen. I work with Aflac and out of Columbus, Georgia. And I'm pleased to be here before the committee and answer any questions that you might have.
Can you pull that mic a little closer to you, please?
My name's Gary Allen. I'm here with Aflac, and I'm pleased to be before the committee and answer any questions that you may have.
The question that Representative Cannon
asked. You asked how...
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may, I mean, I am interested in Aflac's product, but the bill, of course, deals with accident-only insurance generally, and so I had a pretty good handle on the product that Aflac sells, and I think you can make a pretty strong case that it's not a what most people think of when they think of health insurance. My concern is to ensure that if our intention is to exclude Aflac, we're drawing this up correctly, and when I started to look around at accident insurance online, I find other companies with other products that may, in fact, be what people generally consider health insurance. So I think we're in a very sort of squishy world, which for the other exclusions, at least some of the other exclusions also are in this kind of squishy world. Well, why did we exclude that? That's both health, but maybe not health. So I really, you know, gravitate towards Representative.
We excluded Medicare Advantage because we had to.
Yeah.
Is that really health insurance? Really?
Is it health insurance?
Really? Excluded? Medicare Advantage?
No, we had to exclude that, whether it was or it wasn't.
But it's really health insurance? Really?
I think it very clearly is health insurance. I like the one I have. Could you just tell us a little bit about accident?
Yes, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, basically our policy operates if you have an accident or an injury. If there's a limb or some other part of the body that's damaged, then there's a benefit paid to you. Ironically, we've had a commercial that's been running about 30 days now, and it actually shows our icon duck walking around with dollars in its mouth, in its bill, and it walks past a hospital. It says, no, we don't pay the hospital. It walks past a doctor, and he says, we don't pay physicians, and he walks right into the front yard of the family and hands the monies to the father. So clearly we don't pay, even in our ads, we don't pay doctors and hospitals. Our monies, our benefits go to offset the out-of-pocket cost associated with an accident or an injury in this particular case. And someone mentioned earlier the point of sale contract. I think it may have been Representative Nathanson, but the insurance department requires on our supplemental plans a disclosure be filed at the point of sale, and that document says this coverage is not provided for basic hospital, basic major surgical, or major medical expenses. So it's clear at the point of sale that the agent has to point out to the person that they're soliciting with the insurance coverage that this is not major medical coverage. So they're driving the wedge and separating and distinguishing itself between the two coverages. So I just wanted to make that point as well.
The insurance division has excluded accidental death and dismemberment from this health insurance definition. How are you similar or different from what's referred to in the industry as accidental death and dismemberment? The A&D, I think it's referred to.
Well, I'm probably not, there's probably someone better to answer that question than myself, but my basic understanding is the accident, death, and dismemberment is a much more full-blown policy than our supplemental accident-only policy. and it clearly pays specified benefits within the policy to the policyholder.
More like life insurance and that, I mean, $25,000 for death.
Yeah, there are variations based on economic status. You could buy a Cadillac plan or a Volkswagen plan type scenario. So we offer a variety of types to fit. And the average annual premium is about between $500 and $600 for a family a year. So.
Are there any other questions?
Just clarification. Did you say that has been excluded? The AD&D has been excluded from?
Representative Garrett's original bill that we had was a bill to exclude accidental death and disability insurance. The insurance division, as a part of their rulemaking, excluded accidental death and dismemberment from the health insurance. So we didn't take up Garrett's bill because it was a very specific relating clause. I mean, Mr. Hughes wanted to use that, but it was very specifically about accidental death and dismemberment.
Correct.
So, but they did, by rule, exclude that from the definition of health insurance.
This is not a subset. The coverage provided by this accident insurance is not, in effect, a subset of AD&D.
I don't know the answer to that.
We don't offer AD&D, but I can only make, Mr. Chair, if I may, can only make the point that in the form that the insurance department requires our agents to offer at point of sale, it's Exhibit 2, Form C, and then there's a form number there, but it says that the company's supposed to use this form when you offer accident, death, and dismemberment and accident-only coverages.
Same form?
So it's the same form for both coverages.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
It's a subset.
Well, folks, I'm going to close this work session. I'm going to check in with the revenue chair tomorrow, and I'll also, if it's in answer to your question, Ms. Miller is willing to come down tomorrow to talk to us about that decision, how this fits in. We'll have another thing on the floor tomorrow, in the committee tomorrow that she'll need to be here for anyway, so we can take up these things. And I will close the session, work session on 6 and 3603 and carry it over till tomorrow.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming to visit us. I hope you have fun while you're here.
Contributing to the economy as much as I can.
Good. Yeah, you can use it.
We need it.
I will reopen a work session on House Bill 3639 and turn the floor over to Representative Kotek to get as many nods as she can from us. Right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I want to thank everyone for even entertaining this. You know, we're in a very short time frame, and I do think the folks who got together to make a better product did some good work. There's always questions about whether it gets funded. But I guess what I would need, I think we have the opportunity to make some minor amendments, to have a version before us tomorrow. It would still have to go to Ways and Means, so even if we didn't have a fiscal, I think we could work around that. But I need to. I guess I would need to know the preference for the dash one or the dash two.
The only difference is naturopaths included or not?
Correct. The dash ones include doctors of naturopathic medicine. The dash twos do not. And then the other two items that seemed that I could pull from the testimony that we could fix, if we chose to go with the dash one, there was a desire to separate the definition of doctors of medicine, and I assume doctors of osteopathy, from the doctors of naturopathic medicine.
And to move that into its own statute.
So that's seems simple enough. The other one, I believe, was related to page 2 and the definition of an urban practice site. And what I heard was, could we look at the definition that's used in the rural liability program around a practice must serve some combination based on the population, whatever that was. That sounded like a good idea. I think that was the suggestion for the definition of the urban practice area. And now, if there were other things you heard that we want to consider, I'm open. But those were the two that seemed to pop out of, would want to fix those.
Can we have a raise of hands? Or is that for a non-binding opinion on whether the National
Convention? That's a first for me. I would think that people could go around the room and just informally.
Let's start. Naturopaths or not? Thompson?
I'd like to see the in some capacity if there's an adjustment we could make, but we license them in Oregon, we recognize them in Oregon.
Representative Nathanson?
Senator Cannon?
Yeah, if the point of the bill is primary care, naturopaths provide primary care. They should be included.
So, Vice Chair?
Yeah.
I'd say yes.
I would say yes on the dash ones, which would include them.
Okay.
I'm a team player, so I'm going to go with yes.
So
you can go whatever you want here. You just lose on the count.
You're silos. I'm the ones, too.
Okay.
So.
I'm just not convinced we're going to get there.
There's no money.
Well, besides the no money thing, I'm just not convinced we're going to get there with the right language.
In what particular area, I guess?
Let me get it ready by tomorrow.
Get it ready by tomorrow.
And I'd have to go look at that definition that is used in that rural practice liability program.
And in fact, we worked at length to come up with definitions and, your point is well taken. And this is a Band-Aid on the problem because the pipeline's not, we're not creating a bigger pipeline. You know, how many years, even if we started today, that doesn't, you know, it's years down the road.
We could do it in 5 years. Maybe we could get people on the ground. If we did things that I believe we could do in this state, well, I believe if we doubled the pipeline of primary care residencies in the state, I think it's possible to get very close to that in a year or so, then it would be 3 years before they come out. So I was thinking 2 years to do it, 3 years for people on the ground, that's 5 years. But, you know, there's that story about Napoleon who called his arborist in and wanted this road to look a certain way, and the arborist came in and said, but, sir, it would take 100 years to get the road to look like the way you wanted the road look. And he said, well, then start today. I mean, if it's going to take 5 years, let's do something that can get it moving.
To rephrase that in more common language, what's the best time to plant a tree? Was 20 years ago.
Exactly.
If you didn't do it today.
That's exactly the story. So I think loan forgiveness is a good thing, and there's some evidence that it helps people make decisions. But I think the pipeline is a huge problem. Many of the people who train in Oregon stay in Oregon. Okay. Representative Kotick, do you have the advice you need?
I do, but I'm actually pulling up the bill from 2007 to see if I can at least read the language to see if.
Do you actually remember the number?
I got it up, 183 from 2007.
That's impressive.
That's very impressive.
Oh, no worry, I searched.
Okay. Primary care.
So this is Senate Bill 183. What that says there, it says we could include this as a definition of urban practice area, serves patients with Medicare coverage and patients receiving, that's Medicare coverage and patients receiving medical assistance provided under Medicaid in at least the same proportion to their total number of patients as the Medicare and Medicaid populations represent to the total number of patients in need of care in the counties in which the doctors practice. So essentially we're saying it's Medicare and Medicaid in some proportion to the surrounding community. So some version of that is what we would use to define the urban practice area. So it doesn't get into that, do not have health insurance, but
might Medicaid. I suggest you use a terminology similar proportion, because this will unleash the bean counters if you use same proportion.
Similar instead of same.
I don't know how you ever arrive at that number. So,
no.
Yes.
And if you're in an urban area, is that it makes a little
you
harder.
Could substantially meet the requirement without meeting it to the nth number.
And I just have a sense that if we want to send it to Ways and Means and they're willing to have it, and we have two Ways and Means members here, then.
And I actually didn't read it all. And Ms. May, what Doug wants to say, it also says that the Office of Rural Health would set the criteria by rule for establishing all this. So
I assume they have.
Yeah.
You have what you need?
Those are the two, fixing docs versus naturopathic in terms of the definition and fixing the definition of urban practice area, unless there was something else. Those are the things that seemed most pressing.
Okay. Close public hearing.
Oh, that was a work session.
I mean the work session, or whatever.
And we're carrying it over?
We are. I've already announced we're carrying it over. We are carrying it over.
Thank you.
What are we carrying over? Let's get, we're carrying 3603 over. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
We're carrying 3639 over. And I think that's it.
I believe.
Yeah.
Everything else gone.
Everything is gone. Ah, we're getting that.
This is what we've got tomorrow.
Is there a Senate bill on the agenda for tomorrow?
There is, Mr. Chair. It's Senate Bill 1047.
1047 is on the agenda tomorrow. So if you guys have a chance to take a look at that.
And we've added an informational. The health licensing agency is coming to give us their updated status, direct entry midwives, and their administrative stuff that they've been involved with.
They do have some interesting information for us. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Scott said they do.